Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
You're listening to the Chasing Tales Outdoor Podcast, where when you can't be in the outdoors, we bring it to you. Welcome back to the Chasing Tales Outdoor Podcast, where we have one simple goal each and every week, and that is to inspire you to get outside and enjoy the great outdoors, whether that's trying something new, doing something you've never done before, but in a different way, any number of things. We don't really care. As long as you guys get outside, we feel like we've done your job. And if you're sitting at home right now, or if you're on your commute to work, which is how most of you guys listen to this, then we're trying to bring you the outdoors when you yourself can't be out there. So welcome back to the show. My name is Walt. I am flying solo, I should say. On this episode, Chase had some family matters to tend to. He normally takes off a week right before deer season to kind of get his mind right, because heavy is the crown that kills multiple 100-inch deer in Florida. So he kind of has to get his heads, you know, his headspace right before the season kicks off. And we are right there on the brink of deer season. As I record this, we are days away. We are in the single digits from the Georgia deer season, and that means Florida Zone C opens up a few days after that, and I could not be more excited. However, with that being said, I also feel woefully unprepared. It seems like every year, no matter how hard I try to get plugged in, get ahead of that to-do list that I told you guys about in a previous episode, it only goes so far because time is limited. And as you guys know, I've got an infant here at the house, and he is amazing. Love that dude to death, but he definitely has put a cramp on my scouting plans. But that's okay, because if you relate to that, this episode is actually going to be for you guys. I sit down with my good friend Bo Lees, who expressed just the other day a similar sentiment, that he felt like he was behind, that there was more he could have done in the off season, and we were discussing how each of us were going to address that issue. And so about halfway through that conversation, I was like, bro, we're getting on the phone, and we're going to do a podcast on this, because this topic is all too good. So a little bit of flashback history. Bo Lees is a South Georgia resident. He chases all manner of animals with a stick bow, with the exception of turkey, which he is an adamant shotgun user in that regard. But he is a Warren Womack disciple. He loves chasing deer on feed trees, and he loves journaling. If you recall, he was the guy that got me into journaling during turkey season, and now subsequently has gotten me into deer hunting journaling. And that's where today's topic is going. We're going to talk about how you can use previous year's successes or failures to set yourself up for success in the current year by going back to your journals, going back to those historical trends that can always be there to help you make those decisions when you feel unprepared. And Bo and I also talk about how we utilize in-season scouting, especially on the beginning of the year, to set ourselves up for success during the rut, during postseason. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. Now, before we get to that, we do have to thank the people who make this show possible. First and foremost, that's our Patreon subscribers. These guys sign up to contribute money to the show on a monthly basis. That money goes to us doing more giveaways, more traveling, more out-of-state filming, more in-person podcasts. That's what this money goes towards. It just allows us to bring you guys greater things and bigger capacity, and we are fully indebted to all the different people who have signed up. And in the last 6 to 8 weeks, the growth has been tremendous. We've got to thank a couple people here: Rob Seibert, Mark Ortolani, and Kyle Snookin. Hope I didn't mess up any of you guys' names. You know I'm terrible about that. But yeah, thanks to all you guys for signing up to support the show. If you're unfamiliar, what you can do is you can join our $5 or $10 tier. That money, like I said, goes right into production costs. We don't make any money off this show. And depending on your tier, you can get free hats, free stickers, obviously a shout out on the podcast. You can also get added to our digital deer camp. So what is digital deer camp? It is a Marco Polo group where we video chat about a whole variety of topics. And it is also a Discord group. Now, many of you may not know what Discord is, but it's something new that we just rolled out the past couple weeks. And while we worked out the kinks, I didn't really want to spend a whole lot of time broadcasting it to you guys. But think about it like an old school forum with a modern twist. It is delineated by subject category, so the conversation's easy to navigate through. And if there's a category that needs to be added, we add it all the time. And so this is available to all the tiers. It's a great way for you to meet up with new hunters in your area, which is how it's currently being utilized by several of our members. It's a great way to share deer hunting tips and gear talk. I mean, we have a guy that's doing a video right now on how to refill his thermocell cartridges, and we've got another fellow who's going to show us his rifle build. And so no matter what you're interested in, we've got a subgroup for you inside that Discord group. And it's just one of the ways that we want to say thanks to you guys for always supporting the show. Of course, I have to mention that every quarter we give away a piece of gear or a couple pieces of gear. And this time we are giving away a Vortex rangefinder. You still have a couple weeks to get in on that. So if you sign up before September 30th, you get entered into that giveaway. We'll do another one from the period October to December. It's overwhelming the amount of support that we're getting over there. The community is awesome. I can't believe that we have assembled a group of people, of like-minded people, to the degree that we have, and it's just awesome having that community. So if you want to be a part of that community, if you want to be part of that education that's happening over there, and you want to support the show, check it out, patreon.com/chasingtailsoutdoors. The link is in the show notes as well. Also, we got to thank Spartan Forge. Now, Spartan Forge is where artificial intelligence and actual data meet to make you a better deer hunter. This is not going to tell you exactly what tree stand to sit in, but it's going to take millions of data points that have been scrubbed clean to come up with predictions based on every measurable data you could come up with, whether that's the moon phase, the weather phase, period of the rut that we're in, what direction the wind's going. It's going to help you make decisions based on your in-person scouting and actual trends that we can observe live deer in the wild doing. So check it out, SpartanForge.com. They have an app coming out this month that is going to blow your socks off. And if you sign up today and use the promo code CHASINGTAILS, all caps, you can save 25% on your subscription and lock in that price for life. $20 a year for this app moving forward. It is going to be remarkable. Check them out, SpartanForge.com. Also, we got to thank the people over at Tethered, man. You guys know that we are huge saddle hunters. I just got some of their new 8mm ropes and their Predator XL. Those 8mm ropes are ridiculously small. They take a lot of the bulk of my setup, as bulky as a saddle setup can be. It makes it even smaller, and that Predator XL for those all-day sits is going to be amazing, which is, that platform is even remarkably light for the fact that it's 40% larger than the regular Predator. So check it out over there at tethernation.com. if you are interested. So guys, I am excited to get you guys to this episode. Chase will be back soon. I appreciate you guys tuning in for my lengthy intro. You know, you guys know how wordy I can be, but I appreciate what each and every one of you have done. We had a world record all-time high downloads in the month of August, and it's because you guys are spreading the word of Chasing Tails, and I appreciate each and every one of you for contributing in whatever fashion it took to get us
Ladies
to that point.
So
let's spread the word
the South,
about Chasing
Georgia
Tails
religion.
All the way across the Southeast.
Chances are,
and across
if
the U.S.
here on camera,
with
you've
that,
been watching
I'm going to send you guys off to the
year,
podcast.
And then suddenly he goes missing. It's because the fellow on the line's probably shot it with a trad bow in a loincloth with homemade cane arrows and flint-napped, hand-napped broadhead. Did I get all that right? You told me to hit it in a certain order.
You say that, and I'm ordering all these new fancy bows, so I feel like I'm going to lose some premise this year when my videos come out. I think we talked earlier about my French bow that's on the way here.
Well, I think, you know, the unfortunate thing is, now that you've admitted that, I think your Instagram profile has just taken a hit. You should see, I think, at least a marketed decline in subs.
I'll just tag Snyder and everything, and I'll pick them all back up on the other end of the plane there. I'm pretty much building the bow he made famous, so
yeah,
we'll see how it works out.
Well, I mean, just the hashtag struggle stick and you're set, right? I mean, that's how it
exactly
works.
Exactly. Yeah. I may even get the hat, who knows. We can put the Chasing Tails logo on the front of it, and I'll put the struggle stick on the back when I turn it around. There you go. Help us both out.
Oh, I have got the infamous Bo Lease on the phone, dude. You have not been on the podcast since about this time last year.
What's new in your world? How did your deer season go last fall?
The deer season went well. It started out with a bang. I don't kill many deer during bow season, mainly because it's just hot, and I like to watch a bunch. But I started out with a bang. I killed my biggest buck with a longbow, which was nothing, I mean, by any means super spectacular. He's a 110-inch deer. But I was able to get most of it on film. And he was a deer I actually didn't have history with, which was a very big rarity on my private property. But from there, I ended up killing my 14th deer, which will probably be the last year with my recurve after the limb twisted with it on public land on a place I grew up hunting. It was actually the first place I ever hunted. My dad took me when I was actually 4 years old, comically. And we hunted that morning. He laughed. So we were in the stand 10 minutes. To me, it felt like we were in there 10 hours. And we crossed the road and the game warden pointed at me in my, you know, orange vest and like army fatigues camo standing up in the seat and goes, "Don't let him out of the truck." And, you know, this is in the 80s. My dad had no clue that under 16 was not allowed on the WMA except for an adult child. And I said, "Oh, yes, he's not getting out of the truck." And we hunted all morning. So. But yeah, I killed one there with a bunch of, I call it my old guy hunt. It's a bunch of guys that are trad. They're a lot older than me. And then I broke down and broke out the boomstick, man. And wow. I went to work on the girls. I think I ended up with 7 total. So. I did have an opportunity with my biggest buck ever. I guess I sent you the footage of it. I got some great footage of him, but didn't quite kill him. I think my wife thought I was going insane because I was running a cell camera and I was actually running Spartan Forge at the time. And it was comical when the deer would exit the home range section, I would get a picture of him on my cell camera. And I woke up 2:30 in the morning, rolled over my wife and said, "I'm going to my lease an hour away. And I'm going after him." And rode the whole way over there, was set up 2.5 hours before daylight. Deer walked in before the sun crested, and he caught my wind. I was holding a very fine wind, and he crossed it right as I was getting ready to draw. And that was all that big guy took, and he took off. But the footage was good, so that's always a plus, right? My father didn't see it that way, and my buddies over here gave me a lot of crap about it. But, yeah, at least I got some footage of him. So, and he made it. So I actually have him on camera right now. The only card pull I've pulled this year, I'm pretty sure it's him I have on camera right now. So, and he looks spectacular.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Well, you know, if it's not on footage, it's not real. I had so much fun last year, almost documenting my adventures. One of which you and Robbie were kind enough to come out there and help me scavenge. And actually weeks afterwards, you guys went out there trying to find that deer. But, you know, some things just don't work out. But you gave me a good tip on that deer, and I got that hunt again this year. And we're going to be sharing deer camp this year. I mean, you might not be in our camp, but we're going to be hunting the same WMA this year.
I had dinner with my wife tonight, so we're doing this a little bit later. And I told her, I was like, "Yeah." And I was like, Robbie was actually there with me tonight. And I told him, I said, "Yeah." I said, "Walt's going to be in camp." He goes, "Yeah, I'm going to be dragging a deer out." He said, "Is dinner going to be a little bit late?" And I said, I'll let Walt know he's got to cook a little bit later for you to drag your deer out. So he's already started a little bit of smack talk there. He's actually going in the morning to scout again. He's bow season, that's his big place, so it's going to be exciting to see what I'm anxious for him this year. He's put in more work there than I think I've ever seen him put in work. So, and he's found some good stuff this year. I was picking him that I may end up having to steal a couple spots from him during bow season because I'm so far behind right now.
Well, I think far behind is the norm for everyone that I know. Myself included. I'm speaking for myself. I know that in our Patreon group, which is rapidly picking up speed because deer season's here close. The theme has always been like as much preparation as we've put into it, we still feel underwhelmed or unprepared, I should say. And I kind of feel similarly, but I feel like of all people, I have a pretty decent excuse. That is, my son was born this year, and that has effectively killed my entire summer scouting plans. Not that there really were very many scouting plans, but, you know, my normal routine is woefully messed up. And you and I were kind of talking about that. And I thought, you know what, if there's anybody who could come up with a really good game plan with, let's see, as we're recording this 9 days before the season, it's bow.
Actually, I think it's 8 days.
Is it 8 days?
Yeah, it's 8 days. Yeah,
you're right.
Actually, I was talking to a guy today about this. I made the same comment to him. I said, "Man, I'm so far behind." I'm actually taking away one of my scouting days Sunday to go help him move some stuff on his property, on his private, that he's unable to do by himself. But I told him, I said, at this stage, I feel like the best thing I can do is grab my pack, saddle, bow, and just go into some areas that I know have produced in the past or have potential with trees, and just walk until I find the hottest sign. And I've had some pretty good luck doing that, especially on some of the public around here. There's so many persimmon trees. It's just finding the one that's dropping. And it's kind of 4 years ago when the hurricane came through down here in the Southwest, it changed everything. I think I've told you before, I had over 40 persimmon trees that all produced in some capacity. And after the hurricane came through, I had one left.
Didn't it die last year?
Oh, it, yeah. Well, no, that was the new one I found during big season, and it was dead last year when I came back. I found another new one this year and another new one during pig season this past year. One of them's producing. The other one I haven't went to check. And at this stage, I think I'm just going to go in and throw a hunt, because the way it sets up, it makes a good transition. So, if it looks bad, I'll just move closer to the transition and set up for that, you know. You got to have that 20 yards and in with that stick. So it makes it a little bit easier to know whether or not you should hunt both or none at that stage. I'm going to put a lot of emphasis on in season for sure this year. And then, I mean, and I think I feel double behind the gun, because I got drawn for Iowa this year. I'm putting a lot of, it's probably going to be the last trip my dad gets to go. He'll be 66 this year. So 4 years to get the zone we're going. It makes more sense for us to do Kansas or Ohio, somewhere we could, or maybe even Illinois, Indiana, where you don't really have to draw you got a better chance to draw every year. So I'm putting a lot of emphasis to get him back in there and get him another deer. So, and it's kind of funny. I think I told you the story, you know, he feels like he cost me a deer, which he kind of did the last time we were there after he shot his. So you're shooting first. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get to go back most likely. Let me just film you. I'd much rather take some great pictures of old white beard behind a deer than my ugly mug there. So it's been a ton, man. My eyes hurt. I'm pretty sure if my boss knew how much I've been staring at maps while I was at work, he would want some of my paycheck back, on top of how much I'm already working. But yeah, it's been a mess. My wife actually made a comment the other night, asked me if I was texting another girlfriend. I turned my phone to her and had Onyx up, and I was like, "No, I found this great IHAP place. It's only an hour and a half from where we're currently planning to stay. I'm just trying to see if it's worth it." So
that's awesome, man.
Yeah, been a mess.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things, I think perhaps what may be the hardest thing for hunters is in-season scouting. The idea, especially the weekend warrior, you get to hunt 7 days a week. The rest of us have to do it on Saturday, Sunday with everybody else. And so it's one of those situations where I think it's very, very hard for people to take the time in-season scouting, because you feel like you should be hunting, right? I can't kill them if I'm not in that position. But if you talk to a lot of people, and this is something I really forced myself yet last year to do, if you talk to a lot of your killers, like the elite killers, the one percenters of the world, and I would not deign to say I'm even remotely close to the upper 50th percentile, but if you talk to those one percenters, in-season scouting is perhaps the most important part of what they do. The constant learning, the constant scouting your way into fresh sign. And I did that inadvertently last year when I stumbled upon a piece of public that didn't have a whole lot of pressure for a variety of reasons. I literally scrapped my entire game plan for the year and spent the month of November picking it apart and finding that fresh sign so that in December I could, you know, really make a solid moves on it when I thought I'd have a better opportunity with the rifle. And I feel like that's going to be kind of where you go with this. Now, you have areas where you have history, and so the in-season scouting is different. But what does in-season scouting look like for Bo Lease, feeling like he's way behind?
Acorns. I, I,
I've got the areas where I know where persimmons are that I've already found if I come across one, but I'm going to be looking for early dropping water oaks. The WMA I hunt has some white oaks that do get cut by squirrels. It's the running joke with this WMA is the moment white oaks drop is the moment it closes, and it's there's nothing truer from the fact you can it opens up for small game hunting shortly after the bow season close or the muzzleloader season closes. And if you walk it for pigs, you'll see water oaks, I mean white oaks dropping everywhere. So if you can find the early ones there, but water oaks, the early water oaks, that's where I'm at. And I'm gonna see something you said there a second ago about taking time with the killers at Scout. I've had the pleasure of sharing several campsites with Robert Carter, Chris Spikes, some of the real killers here in Georgia, as I would call them, with the trad gear. And I don't remember which one of them said it around a fire one night, but they made a comment. They had walked 3 miles that day, a loop checking, and they had the place we were at. They had 50 trees. They already knew were dropping, and they were talking. They said 5 of them we can kill them right now, but they went and walked looking for more. And their response was, "We could kill on those, maybe. I'd rather have a tree I know I can kill." And they're willing to put in that time to find the one. And to be honest with you, both of them killed I would call a super respectable 8-point the next 2 days while we were there off of trees they found that were in the right spot to produce the right things. So that's something that stuck with me in that regard. Don't be content just because you see something that may look good or like I said, I have history in certain areas. If I get there, if it looks good, I'll throw a hunt. But if it's not the right spot, there's no need to stay there. So I'm going to put some boot leather in. I'm going to put my pack on my back, my bow in my hand, and hopefully the wind somewhat in my face. And I'm going to start walking some of these creek bottoms that are still standing, and I'm going to look for water oaks that are starting to drop early, which there should be plenty.
Well, you know, it's interesting you talk about the water oaks because I grew up, you and I have talked about this offline. For anybody who doesn't know, there's like a handful of people that I talk to every day. My wife, Chase, the co-host, Bo, and Adam and Parker, Adam Cruz and Parker McDonald. And like you guys get priority every day. It seems like I touch base with you guys about a variety of things. And one of the things we touched about in the course of last year was that I realized how in demand water oaks can be. I grew up avoiding water oaks, and this may be specific to like maybe the deer that I grew up hunting, right? Maybe in that area, the preferred trees weren't water oaks. But as I have gone the last couple years thinking about preferred feed trees, and stuff like that, water oaks have really climbed up the totem pole in priority. Have you noticed that it really depends on the property, or is that kind of a rule across the board?
I've hunted where you grew up at in southeast Georgia, Statesboro. I actually killed my first deer with a recurve in Statesboro, Georgia, on a travel corridor between a field, and there were some water oaks in there. Now at the time, I didn't know there were water oaks. To be honest with you, I knew there were oaks. I called them red oaks back then. I didn't know enough to know the difference. And he come walking through at 12 o'clock, and I ran an arrow through him. But I will say that I see it more in the southwest central area of Georgia. So southwest to central in the southern part, it doesn't matter which property I'm hunting, WMA, if there's water oaks dropping, I see deer on them. If it's the right set. And it is real funny. You can hear Warren Womack talk about it all the time. And I mean, I hate to regurgitate stuff that people have probably already heard, but there are specific trees that they will hit. I mean, I grew up on a WMA that had a duck impoundment that was almost 4 miles long. And you can walk that duck impoundment the third week of October, and almost every tree is dropping acorns. But there might be 5 of them on that whole stretch that has deer crap under. And you put your stand there, you'll literally walk deer. They may grab an acorn, but most of the time they're just shooting straight shot to that tree. And they're coming to it, and they're going to eat it until it's gone. And it's kind of weird. The one thing I've seen is you'll have a tree that'll drop a ton, and then you'll have one that just drops a little bit. And they may just like that little bit tree. So you might get 2 days at it, or maybe 3 days at it, and then it's done. And then they're moving on. So I've seen that. And I'll say it's a good buddy of mine that actually hunt a bunch of these properties. He picks at me a ton because he's a big transition guy. He wants transitions in pine flats and stuff. And he picks on me for walking in the flats. But the problem I have with transitions, like I said earlier, I need a deer inside 20 yards. I, a transition doesn't do me a ton of good during early season, because you can climb a tree, you can watch a deer walk, and it may take this trail, and you move over there the next day and it's not there. He may be where you were the day before, or he may be 30, 40 yards over. And a lot of that has to do with the browse that are in some of these pines on the edge of these transitions as well. So for me, I'd much rather spend time walking, looking for the water oaks that are hot, that are right now. And you killed your deer, I believe, last year at the tether hunt you were at, right? Underneath the water oak?
It was underneath. Yeah, it was underneath the water oak. Mm-hmm.
I remember listening to that podcast. You were talking about you didn't put much emphasis. And I was thinking, as we said, you know, one of the guys I talk to every day, I'm like, does he not listen to me? Does he just – am I talking to a wall? I remember I was kind of smiling to myself, and I listened. I was like, we're going to have a long talk about this. I felt like a dad watching his son miss a shortstop grounder, going, you know, we get home. That's what we're going to do right there.
Well, it's just funny, and I think genuinely what it is – like, if I'm being honest about the situation, is I think I grew up observing a preference based on individual trees, not based on a larger body of evidence. And so I went about my life with a confirmation bias that I had thought I had realized that they don't prefer this kind of tree, they prefer this kind of tree. Because where I grew up, literally the property specifically that I hunted deer growing up, you could walk past water oaks and there would be acorns from year after year after year carpeted the ground underneath them. Now, if you found a live oak that was dropping an abundance of acorns, you bet your butt that they were underneath it. And that obviously just had something to do with the property, because it's so different property to property. And Warren came on the show and he said the same thing. He was like, listen, I walk past all of these different trees. Hey, I inventory all these different trees, and I'm just looking for that fresh sign. So one of my questions for you is, we talk about the in-season scouting, the amount of time you put into it. We had a Patreon member today say, God, I hate the bumper crop years because there's just food for them everywhere. My immediate thought is, that's true, but probably some of those trees are preferred. So during bumper crop years, are you relying on past discovery? Do you feel like the trees kind of bounce around, or are there a couple trees that every year they really like to gravitate to?
The place I was talking about, the duck in town, I hunt every year. I have three trees on there. I'll check every single year. The first day I get out, I do a 4-day hunt there. I'll check those three trees every time. One of them is a mile walk into the swamp. If there's acorns on the ground, I'll hunt that tree immediately. And I'll see a deer or I'll see a hawk without fail. Now, with that said, where I'm at now, I see a lot different production of trees. The same trees produce, but it's almost like the deer don't like the same tree from year to year. It's kind of, and I don't know if that's a private land crop thing, or if that, and the deer just aren't that close to that tree when I'm there. And I don't run a lot of cameras on public, so I don't have the answer to that one. And it is one that kind of, it bugs me a little bit. Now, I'll say, when I find a persimmon tree, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to see I have a 3-scat rule. If there's three piles of poop underneath it, I'm going to hunt it. If they're somewhat fresh and there's three piles, I'm going to hunt it. And I seem to have fairly good success with that. So I get that. My lease, I have a water oak that drops every year. Unless there's drought or, you know, something comes through, that natural disaster, I have a water oak that has acorns on it in some capacity. There are deer there the third week of October. Now, there may not be the most deer there if it's not a great year, but there are deer there, and you can guarantee I'm going to be there hoping that some. My buck last year was actually killed off that tree.
So to the people that say that you can't kill bucks off of feed trees, have you found a correlation to where that feed tree is and it mattering with that? Like, yes. Are you finding feed trees next to cover? Like, what are you going for here?
I'm finding a feed tree next to cover. The buck I killed on it last year, he actually skirted around the side of the tree. There was three bucks in the bachelor group. The two small ones fed directly underneath me. And I filmed one of them. I actually ended up missing that buck later. And the one that I let walk, I thought it was, I had his twin, I guess is the best way to describe him. I missed him later in the year. Thank goodness. But, the buck that I was with actually skirted the tree to the downwind side, and he had formed a scrape there, and he was working a scrape when I shot him.
So I believe what he was doing was the does that were there all morning feeding underneath that tree. I think he had a scrape back there, and he was trying to see if Lucy was getting ready to come in, which it was October 26th or 27th, I think. So we're right there at that stretch where it's getting right. But that area, you take a knee underneath that tree, and at a deer's level, you can't see. It's broom grass. The only part that's clean is that tree. And it's clean because of me. I clean it out every year.
So let's go back to the scouting component of this. We're talking about how we feel like we're behind. And if we feel like we're behind, I think it's almost difficult for us to ignore the fact that what we're saying is we have to check a lot of trees here. And so let's make the correlation here into how you go about marking your trees. How do you go about prioritizing the trees that you're checking?
Postseason scouting, to start with, if I find a tree during while I'm pig hunting in January, I'll mark it on Onyx. If I find a persimmon tree, which, you know, in January and February, if nobody knows, that's the best time to find persimmon trees. A swamp persimmon is the blackest tree in the world. You can look through a swamp in January and see forever, and you can see once you find one, you'll know what it looks like. I mean, it looks like a burnt pine tree out there. I pick it; it has big dogwood looking bark at times, but it is just dark as dark can be, and you can see them. And I'll go up to them and I'll look underneath them. I'll see if it looks like there's some old rooting. The only time pigs are actually a fortunate thing is for those persimmons, because they'll go back and they'll root under. They'll do the same underwater oak trees a lot. Now, it may not be, it may be, you know, they rooted it up because it was the last thing left, but it gives me something to come back on. And so what I'll do is I'll have a stretch there where I'll have 10 or 12 trees marked, and I'll go back through and I'll walk those and I'll check them off. One of them, you know, whichever one's hot, it doesn't matter if it's the first or the 12th, then that's the one I'm going to climb on.
So let's talk about how you inventory your findings as you go. I think one of the interesting things to me is how you go about archiving the data that you find. This is something that every year I want to do better as. And actually, to be completely honest, you turned me on to the journaling component, and I have since passed this tradition on to numerous other individuals. During turkey season, you got me started on this during turkey season, dude.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's great. So I actually keep two separate journals. I keep a paper version of every deer I shoot. I actually got one sitting here in front of me. I put the day the deer was killed, the time I shot it, the temperature, the wind, the barometric pressure. I put the weight, the sex, and the weapon used. And then I actually do a brief synopsis of what the deer did. And at the end of that, in highlighted, I put what the moon is. I'm not a super big moon guy, but I can say I've killed more deer over a waning gibbous moon of some portion, either overhead or underneath, than any other moon phase. I don't pay enough attention to the moon phase, no, but I do keep that. And I will say I will take time to hunt. The other thing I do is while I'm in the stand, I use one of the electronic, I don't even know what, maybe hunt stand, something that has a journaling form. I used it, and I've been using it for years now. Every deer I see, I put in there immediately. And the reason I like it is because it drops my location there. So I can do it. You pull up even my private land looks like a disaster out there. It's like trying to find where's Waldo. but I have every deer that I've seen. And it automatically gives me the time, the weather, and everything. And what I like about that is I can actually go back and I can put that in a spreadsheet form. And that gives me the time, what was going on at that phase. And then, the other thing, my private land, I'm the number two man out there, I guess you would call it. And one of the things I implemented when we did it was I wanted everybody to bring their deer out of the woods. And this is from a man who cuts every deer up in the woods. So I had to start doing it as well, I'm probably the biggest complainer out there as far as dragging a deer out of the woods. But I make everybody bring the deer out of the woods, give me a live weight, take a picture of the head, whether it's a doe or a buck, give me an inside measurement, and write it all down on a form with the date and their name. And selfishly, what it gives me a little bit of advantage of, I know where everyone's area is on the place. So I'm able to go back and look at where they're at. So in correlation to what time of year and where they killed their deer at. And this is the fifth year we've been doing it. And I've actually I told you the other day, I actually pulled some stats that were, I'm actually going to post up on our wall up there. I've got a sheet I came up with of our bunch of our averages and such. And I'm curious to see how many folks actually look at it. But it was pretty eye-opening to me as how much acorns actually play. And you got to think, this is a super ag area. And it was just crazy to see the difference of the correlations there of what changed, even to the point of when we killed our larger deer. Not my larger deer, our bigger horn deer and our larger body weight deer.
How do you go about, before we start getting down this rabbit hole, when I envision trying to journal all of this information, I see something that just constantly changes as I go, like, ooh, I need to add this, ooh, I need to add that. How do you go about including all of this information? Like, do you have inconclusive or impartial, parts where you don't have data for things? Like, how did you go about this?
I'll be honest with you. I started out just when I killed a deer, and it was actually my dad. My dad made a comment one day. We were sitting there. I was back from college. We were having a beer, father son time, and he made a comment to me. He said, "Son, how many deer have you killed in your life?" And I sat there and I started thinking, and I'm doing math, and I mean, I was 22, somewhere in there. And I'm doing the math in my head, and I said, I don't know, 20, 25, 30? And he goes, I have no idea, son. He said, every time I count them up, I come up with another one. And I said, and I'm sitting there thinking, I was like, okay. I said, well, what if we write them down? And he said, well, yeah, and, you know, we're sitting out on the back deck, you know, neither one of us went inside to write them down. Well, the next deer season rolled around, I was like, there's got to be a way to do this. So I sat down on a piece of paper, and I just went through and wrote down every deer. And then I turned the page over, and I wrote down every deer again. And I had one or two extra deer. And then the third time I did it, I had one more than that. The fourth time, I had the same number. And I was like, okay, so this is where I'm at. My dad, he called me back, and it took him a couple dozen times, and he was still coming up with new deer. And he said, he said, I know it's close to 100. That's all I know. And he's content with that. Well, I heard Warren Womack make a comment about journaling. He said, you're only limited by your imagination. So I got thinking about it, and I said, you know, if I had the date, if I had the time, and if I had the temperature, that'd be good. But you know what? I only hunt certain stands on the wind. So what if I had the wind in? And then I got thinking about it. Well, what if I'm hunting that stand, you're like, this stand's good on a northeast wind. Well, what if I'm hunting it on a northeast wind? Am I seeing more deer? Am I getting busted downwind more as if it's an east-northeast wind or just a straight northeast wind? And so I started kind of looking at that, and then I said, well, my dad's always been a big pressure guy. When the pressure's high, the deer are moving. So I said, well, I'll add that in there. I'll add the pressure in. And then you read some Adam Hayes stuff about the red moon. You add the moon phase in there. So I said, well, I'll add the moon phase in there. And I just started slowly and meticulously adding it in there. And then, like I said, that app came along, and I started doing it. And I said, okay, well, this is instantaneous. I can throw everything in here, you know, right now. And a lot of the smaller bucks that, you know, and I by smaller racked bucks that I didn't want to shoot, they were coming close enough. I was able to take pictures of them. Well, I could add that picture in there. And then the next year, I could see that. Well, then you start incorporating that with your trail cameras. And I keep folders. I keep the last 3 years on my current laptop. The others go on my large jump drive, I mean, my external hard drive, but I keep the last 3 years there, and I'll go back and see, you can see correlations for bucks that make it through, which my place is, it's pretty ravaged by the gun hunters, but we have a couple bucks that make it through, and you see the correlation of when they're hitting scrapes. I mean, it's within 1 or 2 days, they're hitting the same scrape, or they're on the same doe, or they're in the same spot. So then I started kind of putting some numbers together, and I was like, okay, well, let's keep up with that. So I started, my folders changed where I had the deer, I have the deer cataloged out in there. So I have, you know, Buck A here. I had him I had him as a 2-year-old here. He's on this scrape December 7th. Well, he's there December 9th this year. Same buck, a little bit bigger at 3 years old. Now, if he makes it to 4, is he going to be there again? And, you know, things like that started to kind of, I want to say, I don't want to say like I guess evolved would be the word there. It just, it made sense to me to start trying to track some of that. I mean, I'm running, 13, 14 trail cameras right now. I might as well use it as opposed to, oh, there was a deer here a week ago. I mean, what good does that do me? You know, it's next year it's going to do me a lot better. Okay, he's here then. Well, maybe he'll be through, or maybe another deer will be through. And I'm starting to see that more and more as I'm actually taking the time to put that into effect and actually, like the waning crescent moon. I mean, waning gibbous. I mean, I would have never in a million years thought anything about that, or crescent, not gibbous. I'm sorry. So it's, you can put as much as you want. I mean, you really, really can. And I don't think you can put too much detail.
Well, I just want you to know, I had my deer journal. God, I got Ben Hill County on that, didn't I?
They told me how to count a potato real good there, so be careful.
Robbie's going to enjoy this one. Yeah. I had my deer journal up ready for you, and as you've been talking, I've been adding things, just different categories. And I'm going to go back because I've only got about, I think I got about 25 or 26 bow kills that I can recall. And I'm going to go back and try and fill in these information, these things. And, you know, some of it's subjective. What's the acorn crop that year? You know, I'm probably going to use like a 1 to 10 scale. You know, I mean, you come up with metrics as you can.
I'll give you something that I guess you and everybody else listening to this will be the first people I've talked about. The other thing I do every year is at the end of the season, when I go back to move all my, like, I move my paper stuff into a folder, I take the last page and I write down what I learned that year. And most of it's on notes in my phone. If I screwed up somewhere, I have that and I can pull that back up and look at what went wrong. I got one sitting in front of me. This is from 2017, maybe? No, 2018 deer season. The number one thing I learned that year was pay more attention to blowdowns as deer funnels when setting up. And that came about from hunting public land. I set up on a blowdown, and I set up on the wrong side of it. And the deer literally, I watched deer funnel at 35 yards all night, and I couldn't shoot them with a stick.
Yep. Once we had a hurricane come through, we've had one or two every year, but we had one come through before Michael that blew down trees in one of the WMAs that I hunted. And I was blown away, floored at how those deer used those blowdowns for cover.
I'll give you the other one here that I actually capitalized on last year. 2018 was make time to drill more trees on private. So I drilled trees with a woodpecker drill to go back in with my saddle and hunt for quicker hunts. Mm-hmm. That year I drilled one because that was the year the hurricane came through, actually. I went back in the following year and I think I drilled 20-something trees. I think I only hunted maybe 10 of them, but I drilled over 20 trees. So it's, you know, you can make a journal. You can write all this stuff down, how great it is, you know, and you can look back on it. Your kid will look back on it one day and say, gosh, Dad was a great deer hunter. He was looking at all this. But if you don't put it to use, are you going to become a better deer hunter?
Right.
And that's kind of what I'm trying to understand there is, can I do more with this data that I'm taking? I mean, data's great. I mean, that's my whole job is looking at data, you know, how I can make Joe Bob more sober and how I can help more people. But it doesn't matter how much data I take. If I don't apply it and make a change to make the better, then it's just data. It's just words and numbers sitting on a page. There's no help at that point. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it'd be great. I mean, you know, Lord willing, one day my kid will look back and say, oh, man, gosh, Dad had some great adventures. I mean, this is wonderful. But I'd much rather him look back and, you know, look at 2016 and then turn around and look at 2030 and say, gosh, Dad killed 10 bucks this year, you know, all over the country. And it's unbelievable how much better he got.
Right. So. Yeah, I could see that for sure. I think you and I, we have very similar interests in that regard. One of the reasons why I film, you and I've talked about this. One of the reasons why I film is because I want to document my adventures for my boy. You know, before he was even a real thought, that was something that I wanted to do. And you know, by the time he's old enough to enjoy these things that you and I are doing, let's be real, you got 10 years. From the time they're born, you've got 10 years. Well, you've already got a jump start doing this for multiple years. You don't even have a kid yet. I've got 10 years of memories, well, a little over 10 years from the video standpoint, that are documented. He's going to be able to watch in perpetuity, assuming YouTube doesn't yank him down or something. You know, they're always going to be there for him to enjoy and learn from. And I think the journaling is something that, when you introduced it to me from a turkey hunting perspective, I realized how advantageous it is going back and recognizing patterns. So one of the reasons why I wanted to have this conversation is because I think your journal, if you haven't already seen the connection, your journal is your gateway to the to being unprepared and fixing that. And I think when you look at that situation, I felt unprepared going into turkey season this year. I was able to identify patterns, where the birds moved to, where they shifted to, because I journaled all that information. And I was able to scroll through every day's hunt. This was all handwritten. I'm going to convert it all to an Excel spreadsheet here shortly. I was able to flip through that and see really interesting patterns. Things like there was about a 6-day cycle for the birds that I hunted where they started off kind of quiet, they peaked, and they dropped. And it was almost a 6-day bell curve every single time. With regardless, it didn't matter what the pressure was. It didn't matter what the weather was. There seemed to be a 6-day cycle that they went through very predictably. And so what that tells you is if you go out there and you're not hearing anything, it's not indicative of a lack of birds or them maybe having moved, you just might be in between those cycles. And so you continue to journal and you continue to find new things. And so if feed trees are something that you want to hone in on, and I think anybody who overlooks feed trees as an option altogether, especially in the South, is perhaps doing themselves a great injustice. I know it's not the most popular thing for a lot of folks. I think it's something you can do wrong. I think there are definitely preferred trees that they're only going to hunt they're only going to feed at during the night. But if you can go back and say, oh man, it's got water acorns dropping every single year and it's always got sign underneath it, I can count on that. You've got a chit in your hand. Now you can go straight to that tree, double check that the thing holds true, and you're not wandering the woods looking for it.
I think you hit on the nail there. The only part I would say different is you and I agree in the part that you got to be able to put your boots on the ground. You got to be willing to go out there, and you're not sacrificing a hunt. You're sacrificing a wasted hunt by going to look for a deer. There's no point. I mean, I could go sit 5 yards off the dirt road and say I'm deer hunting. And once a year, there may be the largest buck on that property might walk by there right in front of me, and I might shoot and kill him, and the whole world will say, oh, my God, Bo, you're the greatest hunter in the world. How did you know he was going to come across there? I didn't. I just happened to sit there. And I think that's one of the sides. You're going to get as much out of anything, but more so, you're going to get as much out of scouting as you are anything else. The more time you're willing to go out there and walk and look for the right spot, the best spot. I've heard somebody say the spot in the spot. That's so true. I hate to toot the horn as the trad guy, but I mean, I have to find that. I have to find that minute spot where that deer is going to walk right there. I used to trap a bunch. I mean, you got to have an animal put his foot in on a 2-inch square. That's what you got to have. It relates so much back to that. And why not be somewhere where the deer is actually coming to you? I mean, you know, in Georgia, I mean, you just dump corn out and there's going to be a deer come by. It may not be the biggest buck in the world, but I mean, if you want to shoot a deer in Georgia on private land, you can dump a 50-pound bag of corn out, sit 80 yards away with a rifle. Eventually you're going to shoot a doe or a small deer. I mean, something's going to come in there to eat. On public, we don't have that option. You got to be willing to go out there and find your corn tree, which in our case is an acorn tree, a persimmon tree. You got to be willing to find it. And I'm sitting here talking to you, and I'm looking at – I have 3 maps blown up on my wall here. One is Iowa, a place up there, but 2 of them are the 2 WMAs I've hunted the most in my entire life. And, I mean, they are tens of thousands of acres for both of them. And I stare at the map, and I see my pins where years ago I stuck in there so I could tell my wife I was at XYZ pin. And then I'd come home, and she was like, yeah, I saw your ring in there. And I was like, yeah, I wasn't even there. I was 20 miles away. You know, I was on a completely different property tonight. Something just told me, you know, I walked in the first area, it didn't look right, so I just moved somewhere else. So we kind of quit that and went that route. But that's the difference. You got to be willing to find the best, not just something. You got to find the best.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on your head. You're not wasting a hunt. You're eliminating a bad hunt. And don't get me wrong. I think at some point in time, there is a point in time where you simply have to start hunting. And sometimes the sign is just universally underwhelming. There are tracts of property that are kind of like that. You might not find, you know, a lot of people, they hear podcasts. I suspect this. I don't know this to be true, but I suspect this because this is something that happened to me. But if a lot of people probably hear these people talk about, oh, I walked in and I found a rub that was fresh and I found a scrape that was fresh and you could smell the urine and I set up and I grunted and you came in. And it's like, that might be the hot sign. The hot sign also might be a fresh set of tracks going to a water oak where there's just a few acorns still hitting the ground, but the sign underneath is a bunch of tracks and some scat, and there's adjacent cover, and that's where you need to hunt. Maybe it's not overwhelming. Maybe it's a faint trail. I mean, a lot of your big buck killers, Brett Mashburn talks all the time about how some of his biggest deer come off of trails that are not beat down, that you have to really be looking to find them, and that buck is just kind of paralleling everybody. And so I like to look at it as I've got limited time in the woods, and the rut is obviously going to be a peak opportunity to kill deer. And so I'm going to spend as much time as I can getting ready for the phases of the rut, which where we hunt, you and I hunt, it's, you know, there isn't like a 1 week time period. Like a lot of the places, it's kind of scattered. And so you have an opportunity there. And so I'm going to spend as much time as I can up into those periods, getting ready for that period. Figuring out where that fresh sign is, where are they shifting, what are they eating on, where are they bedding, trying to put all these pieces together. And then, you know, for that 4 week window that I feel like I can really execute, I'm going to get in there and do it. And I did it successfully three different times last year.
Yeah.
I didn't kill any Pope and Youngs, but I had three different opportunities where I put in way more time scouting than I did hunting. And I pulled the trigger on an animal.
You ask anybody that hunt, well, I mean, you ask yourself, I mean, do you want to go just sit in a tree and play Tetris on your phone? Or do you want to go sit in a tree and see deer all afternoon?
No one likes the helpless feeling of wondering if they've made the right stands location, right? Like that lack of confidence. Everybody's been there before. It's terrible. It's why you can't sit still. It's why you get out the tree sooner. It's why you're moving and you get seen.
Yep. I'll be honest. I would rather sit in the stand in September melting to death, thinking I'm going to kill a deer, to have a deer come in from a direction I didn't realize they were going to come from and blow at me and run off. At least then I knew I was in the game. Then to sit there and see deer feed 80 yards from me underneath another tree, or see them go across a creek crossing 80, 90 yards from me where I can't do anything about it. That to me is the definition of just torture. I mean, agony seeing that. I was so close, but I'm not even really in the game. I'm not close. I seen them, you know, come home, tell my wife, oh, I saw some deer tonight. She's like, oh, great, honey, great. You couldn't get a shot? No, I was on the wrong tree. She doesn't understand that, but I'm sitting here just kicking myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that it's one of those situations, and it's not fun. You know, I went and hunted with Greg in Southeast Georgia on a piece of public I'd never been to before. I really didn't have any good intel in, and I hunted with Greg and my best friend Derek, and those guys hunted a lot. Now, they did a fair lot of scouting as well, but I got up in the tree stand. I think we had 4 days to hunt. Day one, I went in blind somewhere and hunted and then got down and scouted. Day two, I scouted literally all day. I dropped Derek off and I just kept scouting and I kept bouncing around. I'm like, I don't feel confident here. And I'd go to the next spot. And I don't feel confident here. And I kept putting the pieces together in my mind. And the second to last hunt of the day, you know, I had the evening hunt and then I had the following morning hunt. That evening I'd come back to this tree and I had all these hogs. You know, we talked about this, you know, the story, and the listeners do too, but I find all these hogs and I see all this, I hear the acorns raining from the tree, but there's nothing on the ground and it looks like turkeys have scratched everything back. And it's like, this was the best spot. This was it. You found it. You looked everywhere else. This is where you have to make your stand. And I had deer all over me. And realistically, I hunted two times in 4 days, maybe three times in 4 days, just to kill that doe. Sometimes that's what it is.
But you said you hunted how many other people were walking as much as you, and how many of them killed a deer?
I mean, not knocking them.
I'm saying there.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't kill a deer.
People feel like that, you know, I have 4 days to hunt. I should, that in, you know, South Georgia or the Southeast mindset, that's eight hunts. You got 4 days to hunt. You have eight hunts if you're lucky. Maybe if you got there, if you're counting the day you got there, so you only have seven hunts. I mean, you beat the horse to death, and anywhere you listen to now, everybody, all the guys that are killing say, well, you know, really, you don't have eight hunts. You have a day of scouting, maybe 2 days of scouting, before you actually know what you're doing. You've never been there before. Now, I mean, I'm sure you, like I've been talking about, I've been staring at maps. I mean, I have an idea of where I want to go, but I, you know, seeing topo lines and satellite imagery on is one thing, but until you actually put your feet there is completely
that's where it changes quite a bit when you look at that. I mean, and I've got now where I'm going on a hunt the second week of Georgia's bow season with some friends from back home up in North Georgia. One reason I'm excited is because it's friends from high school, so I'll get to see them. But the second reason I'm actually going to, I'm going up there somewhere I've never been before. It's a mountainous place. I can see features on a map, so I can at least have a head start to get up there to find something that looks favorable to at least pinch deer down. Then I can find if there's feed tree or if I need to hunt something different up there, whether it just be, you know, crossings or so forth. But I'll have a place to start my scouting. And I think that's one thing that you see a lot of people mess up on. They just go out and walk. I'm just going to walk until I find what I'm looking for. You don't want to do that during in-season scouting. You don't want to just go walk for days. You want to have a plan. You want to have an idea of, I need to hit this is SMZ. You need to think about what you're looking for when you go out there to scout while it's in season. Especially if you're taking your, you know, if you're putting your equipment on your back and you're going to walk in until you find a hot sign, or you're going to walk until it starts, you got to have a starting spot. I mean, you don't want to go walk a straight pine flat and say, okay, I'm just going to walk till I find something. I mean, everything's going to look good in there, especially down to where I'm at. I mean, you're going to see every briar branch has been eaten on. But you pick an SMZ, you pick something that has a transition to it. And then you have the hardwoods next, you know, you have the hardwoods there, or you have the side. Then you have a starting point, and then you can, like you said, maybe you can find your trail, your faint trail. You can take it off and say, okay, well, maybe he's bedding here. He's coming. Oh, look, you know, looky there. That tree looks like it's been haired underneath it. Let's walk over and take a look at that. And then you can start putting the pieces together. You're still, the biggest thing starting in season scouting is to have a plan before you start. You can be woefully behind, but everybody has 10 minutes to look at a map. I mean, there's so many software, there's so many apps and capabilities now that you can pull it up. I'm looking at these maps on the wall. I mean, I have smaller versions of them from 20 years ago when we didn't have this capability. But I mean, you can put Google Earth on your laptop. I mean, while your wife's watching Grey's Anatomy, you can sit there and instead of crying when Denny died, you can find you somewhere to go take a walk at. I mean, there's a lot you can do from your couch. I think people, everybody can find 5 minutes. I mean, that's, you got your phone. I mean, nobody, no male in America goes to the bathroom and takes a poop without their phone. Don't sit there and play Candy Crush. Look at Onyx for 10 minutes. Right. See what's there.
I think what you just said with a plan is huge. I think that is huge. When I went to Southeast Georgia with Derek, I had friends in the area who had provided me, you know, a lot of what you did, which was kind of like, you know, here's a blood trail, go figure it out. And so I think it was one of those things where it's like, I had 5 to 7 spots to hit, and Derek is, I'm not going to say he's rough around the edges, but he's new to hunting. Right. And so the idea of the why behind it, I was like, here's the spots I want to hit. Here's why. Do you see this? Do you see that? Yes. And so we hit all of those spots. And one of those 7 spots was productive, but I narrowed it down. I had like these huge swaths. I'm like, I want to get here. I want to get there. I want to get here. And we actually found one spot, dude. And it was amazing. The scrapes were some of the largest I have ever seen. And we're sitting there and Derek's like, dude, this is really hot sign. This is what you're saying. This is what you're saying. We should hunt. And maybe we should have, cause we didn't. And maybe there was a big buck there. I don't know. But it was one of those situations where it was like, where am I going to hunt? There's no good tree. There's no cover on the bottom. It was this wide open expanse. And so I walked away from Hot Sign. You know, Hot Sign isn't everything. Where I ended up going, I had security cover next to a preferred feed tree. I mean, that was just like night and day, like connected everything. I told Warren about that and he just kind of laughed. He's like, yeah, I mean, you put it together, do it again. You know?
Yep. He actually told me the same thing 15 years ago via email. it is a repeatable formula. That's what makes hunting feed trees so great. It is repeatable. You can, if you're willing to take the time to walk, you can do it. You can do it consistently. The biggest problem people are going to run into is it's really not finding the trees. It is taking the time to find the actual spot to set up on. It's figuring out which way the deer are coming from. That's, to me, that's where people mess up. That's where I still mess up constantly. And a lot of times what I see is I see feed trees
features produce better for me in the evenings a lot of times than they do the mornings, which the way I like to hunt early season is normally during that stretch is during the evenings. Now, I will say if I find a hot peach tree and I hunt in the mornings, I have had more success at not getting busted. But where I run into in the evenings is as I do, I get busted. The deer come from a direction I wasn't expecting. Or they try to circle the tree and they either AC me, you know, trying to get them on film, or, you know, then again, I mean, I'm 200 pounds of sexiness hanging from the tree there, and not all the ladies think it in the woods that it's that much enjoyable to see. So I do see that aspect. I think that's where a lot of people, I don't think people have as much trouble finding it. Now, they may not know what they find. That may be something that I may be giving people more credit as a whole, but, and I mean, I struggled at times too, like I said, but well, I mean, you look at you last year, you said, you know, it was haired up under. When I heard you describe that on the podcast last year, I was like, oh yeah, that's called a dream right there. I mean, that's, if it looks like it's been haired underneath that tree, I'm going to walk over there. If it's fresh, I'm going to climb it right away. If I find three piles of poop, I'm walking in the tree right there. I'll sit there till dark. I don't care if it's 11 o'clock. I'm going to hunt right there. Oh, I mean, there is going to be a critter come in there.
Dude, I can tell you right now, I ever walk up to a tree that looks like that again, I'm never doubting it again. I could have 45 minutes left of shooting light. I'm climbing that daggum tree.
Like I'll tell you this. I set one last year. It's actually that one I was saying. It's right at a mile into the swamp. I walk down. It's kind of an easy walk till you get to the swamp, as long as it's not too wet on this piece of public. But last year was easy. I walked into the dark. It was kind of comical. I put anybody that finds it, I put a triangle of bright eyes on the tree I'm going to hunt. That's the only thing I put on. I put them on a little above head height. That's the only mark I put. And then I either have it in my GPS or I have it in my Onyx. And I followed breadcrumbs to the tree. Well, I walked in. I put these three in there like 10 years. Or well, I'll say 5 years ago. 5 years ago, I put them in there. And I walked down in there, and it's produced some, but it hasn't been the best. I walked in there, and I could smell pigs when I got in there. Well, the first year I found it, that's how I found it. I smelled pigs, and I walked over there, and it was tore up. I smelled pigs. Walking down, I said, well, I'll just climb this tree. Before I even made it halfway up the tree, I heard pigs in the dark squealing, and I ended up missing a big boar that came in. And then 10 minutes later, after daylight, I had a doe come in that I told you about was the fiasco deer that my buddy here in town still picks at me about as my pincushion of the year. Took two days to kill, but I did get it the first shot. So we'll see. But it's one of those things. Pigs and deer, people say they run each other. Now, the pigs will run the deer off, but the pigs will come in and then the deer will come in. Just because the pigs are there or have been there doesn't mean anything. And I think people are somewhat scared or maybe misinformed about that. A hog does not ruin a spot. Now, he will ruin the opportunity if a deer's already there, but he's not going to ruin the spot just because he come in there. So I growing up down here hunting hogs so much, I mean, I don't mind. And pigs actually help you some, as you said a minute ago, the pigs you saw underneath that tree. They'll help you see a tree a little bit better. Now, like I said, I do want to see some deer tracks or deer scat, but 9 times out of 10, if the pigs are taking the time to root it up, there's deer coming in there, 100%.
Yeah, I think I don't know, man. Deer and pigs have been in the same spot forever. I know people are like, oh, once pigs get on a feeder or something. I think that's really what it is you have guys who are running feeders, and a pig probably, they don't go very far from the feeder, especially if there's cover. And, you know, so every time they get an opportunity, they're running up there. I've never seen a pig and a hog inhabit the same space. But you have something like a feed tree. I mean, those hogs were all through that area, but the deer were all through that area too. I mean, the deer sign was abundant. I think one of the cool things, this is going to be a shameless plug, I make no apologies about it, Spartan Forge has got an app that's coming out. We're going to record with Bill here soon and talk about a lot of the features. One of the things he's told me I could hype is the journal feature. I cannot wait to use it. And as you know, we continue to develop that feature, it's going to be awesome. We're in beta testing right now, but we are now equipped on our phone to have the ability to, in real time, jot down notes. We get home. I use Google Drive just because it's cloud-based, and you know, if my phone craps the bed or my computer craps the bed, I've got it right there in a Excel exportable format. I can then transfer that information the following Monday at work when I don't want to be working. You know, I can move that information, or I can scroll it and make patterns with it on my phone. you know, as we're talking, I've got darn near 21 categories already lined up here, all things that might help identify trends. You know, I can see myself coming up with a tab, and when I find really hot feed trees that I'm going to have the opportunity to hunt every year, probably going to mark them. I'm probably going to mark them, and I'm probably going to go back to them and inventory every year. Did this have acorns? Because some trees don't produce them every year.
And the only friendly amendment I'll make there is put the date of when you right. see a deer or when you see a tree dropping, because I found they drop pretty much the same time every year. Yeah. If they're going to drop that year, it's the same portion.
And some trees do weird things, dude. My brother's got a white oak tree next to his house in North Georgia. Hand to God, it is May. It was legitimately May. You know when I went turkey hunting with him. Mm-hmm. There were still acorns hitting the ground in abundance. The tree was loaded with them. So, you know, I would have never thought that that was the case. I never would have thought that that tree would be holding. But here's, I mean, where does that tie in? Well, if you have a place that the season runs to January and all the other trees are gone and you have a nuttall tree that yep. drops routinely in January.
I've killed deer under water oak trees in December. I've actually killed them all the way up to the 1st of January. I've killed deer underneath, and I've killed hogs underneath old trees, scouting and stuff after deer season, all the way into February. Now it's a little rare. Those are some of those big years where we have floods and the floods recede. But I've water oaks are, that is one of the greatest things about them is that they drop at all times. Mm-hmm. They start early and they go all the way through. So it's a good set of water oaks can treat you very, very well.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. I could see that. I found some areas during turkey season where the ground was raked back really conspicuously. Not quite like a turkey, more like what I saw before. And so I dropped pins and I plan on going back. I've also found entire swaths of trees that don't produce at all, which is weird, but I do have entire swaths. There's about a 750 acre chunk of oaks. I have never seen an acorn drop in any of those trees in 6 years.
Watch him, because eventually it'll happen. Oh, Warren's famous for talking about he killed several deer. It was over five, I believe, under the same tree in 1 year, and it never produced again.
No kidding.
Never produced again. So it was one of the best seasons he'd ever had underneath the tree, and it never produced again. As long as he had the property. So I mean, it's one of those things. You go back and check them all, and you just add them. I mean, that's one of the great features with all these apps now. Or you know, my GPS that I used to carry, I transferred a lot of it to my phone now, but I still have it, and I carry it a lot of times with me when we're pig hunting, because I mean, I have a 128 gig, you know, card in it. I can put as much as I want in there. It's never going to run out. I mean, I'll hopefully be dead before I even get halfway there trying to fill it up. But it's all those trees, and I can go back and, you know, be like this year, I can grab that GPS and, you know what, I haven't been down there. Well, let's grab a stand. Let's walk down there this evening and see if there's anything there. And if there's not, I mean, I come back to the truck and I'll just go home. I mean, that's fine if I walk till dark and there's nothing there. Or if I get out in time and I can go back and go check another spot. I don't mind putting in the sweat and walking to find the right spot.
That has been the hardest part for myself and probably anybody who does what we're talking about right now, is the having the willingness to just simply walk home. And it is something I remember calling Chase and being like, dude, I feel like such an idiot. I have an opportunity to hunt. I only get so many opportunities to hunt, but I'm going back to the truck because I only have an hour and a half left in the evening. I'm deep in this bottom. I haven't seen anything. He's like, dude, if there's no good sign there, don't waste your time. Go home early, cook dinner with Elena, hang out with her, and come up with a game plan for the next day. You know,
well, you can always use that opportunity. Like you just said, you can build up and put in the bank, the family time, so that, I mean, and to be honest, I mean, most of the time we're hunting feed trees is before the best time to be hunting. In all honesty, I use the feed tree time most of the time, mainly to try and fill my freezer for does. And I mean, you're hunting, but then again, you just said the same thing. You had a certain time to hunt. You were hunting, you were walking through the woods hunting, but you're there to kill. And those are very different things. People don't really understand that aspect or don't put two and two together. You're hunting, but you're hunting for the kill. So why would you go sit somewhere that you don't expect to kill something at?
Well, I guess the only argument is you never know, and I guess that's true. But if you consider yourself someone who understands what they're doing, or if you're trying to acquire a skill set where you can say, I have tested X, I have developed X pattern, and you're trying to, you're trying hard to develop a template that you can apply to other places. You have to stick to your guns. Like, you have to, you know, you have to, you can still hunt that, make that sit if you want to, if you want to throw that time at it. I don't, I'm not going to do that personally, but I think it's one of those situations where I think you have to surrender to the fact that wherever you went that day, it's okay that you didn't find what you were looking for.
I heard it. I'm a big quote guy. My wife makes fun of me all the time because I'm always quoting stuff, but I heard something years ago and I don't remember exactly who said it. I know it was when I was in college, but that's mostly guy. But the guy said, if you're betting on luck, you're hoping not to fail. And that sticks with me a lot of times when people say, you know, I just sat there. I was hoping for the best. And I've done that. I mean, I spent years doing that. And I just, there is nothing wrong with it. I mean, if you get one day a week to hunt and you just want to be in the woods, then yeah, that's fine. That's great. During the rut, those are the people that are successful. I mean, to be honest with you, that's when they're most successful. They're, I sat here because, you know, I saw a trail and a deer, you know, a buck walks by and they shoot it. It's there, but I don't want to bet on luck. That I'm at a stage now where if I'm betting on luck, I'm not actually doing my part, I don't think. I mean, we can be honest here. I mean, it's cheaper to buy food at the store. I mean, you know, it's kind of hard to say, you know, the argument of I'm out here to feed my family for the most part. I mean, it's probably cheaper at this stage in life with the way it is to hunt to just buy it at the store. So it's kind of hard to say that aspect. And if you're in that boat where you actually are hunting for food, then yeah, you don't want to put it up to luck. I mean, you only got a certain amount of time. You're costing yourself money the whole time you're there. You might as well be in the best spot where you can have the most success.
Well, let's do this. I feel like we've kind of belabored that as far as we can take it without, you know, coming off kind of preachy. But one of the things I want to do, and I've got about 50 minutes of time to cover it, is, and maybe we need to do a part two to this, but you and I were talking about the correlation between the deer size and the deer that you killed and your journal.
Yeah, like I told you, I had my members. I've got roughly 3,000 acres, and I've got about 40 members, which sounds like a bunch, but roughly half of them hunt, if that makes sense. So it's really not as bad as what it sounds like. But these guys are there every Saturday with their families, and I mean, they are hunting in their area, and they got a gun, and they're shooting. Now, we have some size. I mean, we've got, you know, some 15-inch, it's a 4-on-1 side. I've been trying to implement 15-inch, but nobody wants to go with it. So we've got that. But like I said earlier, what I did was I started having them drag the deer out. I wanted the live weight. I wanted the sex of the deer. I wanted the date they killed it. And I wanted the inside spread. And what I was looking at with those is I've been hunting this property for almost 26 years, roughly, somewhere in there. So I've seen a lot of deer killed off there. I've seen a lot of great deer killed off there. And the Georgia state record was killed not very far from us there. Or no, the county record, I'm sorry, not the Georgia state, the county record for us was killed not very far from there. So it's kind of interesting. But what I did see was, given that I have the ability to know where everyone hunts at, which is everybody, we have it up there. Everybody knows your set area. But as I was able to look back, the years where we had great acorn crops, which on our property over the last 5 years, the best acorn crops we've had have been 2018 and 2020. We had a decent crop in 2019, but it was real spotty. 2017, we had the hurricane come through, and it blew every acorn off the tree, not to mention half the trees over. So let's just take the hurricane year there. 2017, our average deer weight for that year was 124 pounds. That's off every deer we killed I think we killed about 40 deer off the property that year, or 30 deer off the property that year. So 124 pounds. You look at the next year, it was 150 pounds, 149 pounds, 150 pounds was the average weight there. And we had a bumper crop of acorns. Now, you got to understand, we're completely surrounded by ag. I've got a river. I mean, we have of our 3,000 acres, I think a little over 150 or 200 acres over ag, and that doesn't count the hundreds of acres of ag that butt up all the way around us. So, I'm putting that with the acorns there. The other thing that was really interesting there, the years that we have acorns, you look at it, we have large bucks killed the last 5 days of the season, of October, the 27th, the 28th, the 29th, the 30th, and 31st. We have some of our larger bucks are killed right there. The same people are killing them every year. And their areas have water oaks in them that are dropping on those years. Now, the years that there's no acorns, we're looking at the middle of November, which is our rut, which is when everybody hunts. And even on the acorn years, that's still the second best is always that 9th through the 18th, which is our primary rut section. So what I've kind of done from this is I've looked at it, and I think I told you I didn't feel as bad about being so far behind out there, even though I have so much knowledge of my private. We've killed one buck that was of any substantial size in January in 5 years out there. I mean, sorry, in September. We've killed two bucks in January of any substantial size in 5 years. Every deer is killed either October, November, or early December. I actually have the latest buck killed out there in December of any size, and it was December 24th. And it was the second largest buck killed that year. It was 125 inch, 10 point. So what I'm seeing with the acorns, though, is that the years we have them, the deer are bigger. The fat on them is yellow. That's something people don't really know anymore. But yellow fat means the deer's eating acorns. That used to be one of the big wise tales back in the day. If you go out in the Midwest, you know, you kill a deer, they got that yellow fat. I mean, that white fat on them out there. That meat's better, which we now know the white fat is, you know, still just as bad. As somebody that processes their own deer, you leave a piece of yellow fat in your meat, you'll know it. It don't taste good at all. It's acidic. It's tannic. It is not good. It is not good at all. But you know that deer's eating acorns. So it's kind of interesting. It comes back to how we started this today. I mean, not to bring it full circle, but what do I do with this at this stage? Where do I go? I mean, I'm looking at the dates here, and I'll tell you my game plan right now is I'm going to follow the 8th through the 16th. I'm going to do everything I can to be in the woods. I'm going to be in a corridor somewhere of November. I'm going to be there. I've been doing that the last few years, but I'm going to sell out this year if I'm not in Iowa, which I'm supposed to be. So it kind of – at this stage, I'm trying to do the math in my head and figure out, do I go put a bunch of cameras on these corridors and see if what I'm thinking is correct? So in 2022, when I'm here, I can go chase these deer? Or do I try and push the envelope and before I go to Iowa, you know, take an extra day or two off work and go try and catch an early, if we get a cold front, and go chase that a little bit?
This is going to be interesting, man. I could see how this could continue to grow, especially with the Spartan Forge app and the journaling features that are there, technology being as easy as it is to create trends. I think we should touch base after this year and see what our journaling revealed. I think that would be a very fascinating podcast. Well, let's do that. Let's get back after the podcast or after the season and talk about what our journaling showed. But until that time, man, I appreciate you taking time out your evening. I've got to wrap this up and go put a baby to sleep, but let's keep in touch as we always obviously do with the podcast, share that information. And dude, we share deer camp this year, so I appreciate all the wisdom you've passed on, and I can't wait to help you drag out a deer this year.
Oh, bud, looking forward to getting you one. We got a hunk of meat last year. We're gonna get the whole deer this year, right?
We need to tell that story one day. All right, buddy. Take care.
You too, bud. See you. 4 in the morning.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew here at Duck Camp Dinners every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. Birds up in the sky.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.